Get ready to get blitzed on the Blitz podcast at thehuddle.com with your hosts, Steve Gallo and Harley Schultz.
Welcome back to the Blitz Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Gallo, joined, of course, by Harley Schultz. Hey, Harley, how you doing? Did you have yourself a good Thanksgiving?
Well, it's kind of a crazy holiday season here in Minnesota with everything completely shut down. But fortunately, one of my clients was making Thanksgiving meals to go. So my wife and I went and supported him by purchasing the take-home Thanksgiving Day meal, which was very, very good.
Yeah, that's good. So did you have some turkey?
We had some smoked turkey. We had some turkey-based collard greens. We had some macaroni and cheese gnocchi. We had mashed potatoes and gravy. They had a special stuffing that they made. It was a really, really good meal altogether.
Sounds like it. So did you go into a tryptophan coma after having the turkey?
I made it about halfway through my first plate. Usually, and this is interesting, so usually when I go to a family Thanksgiving or so, I will be well into my second courses of stuffing and cranberry sauce before I start to nut off. But not this particular time. This time I didn't even make it through the first plate of food before wanting to fall asleep.
So two things. You gave me something. I got to bring this up first. So I will not eat cranberry sauce or jelly or whatever you want to call it to this day because of my father. So if you're a parent out there, understand what you do and what you say can scar a child for life. Do you want to know why I don't eat cranberry sauce?
Why don't you eat cranberry sauce, dude?
Because at a young age, my father told me it was bat blood.
Oh.
Now, I'm old enough to know it's not bat blood. But guess what? The damage is done.
Did your parents ever offer you black and white pudding as a kid?
No, I'm from the Northeast. That's not something I have any idea what that is. So, and I think I'm glad I probably don't. So anyway,
no, I was gonna say, it's not a black and white cookie.
Okay. Anyway, I was going to say I had a little bit of a tryptophan-induced coma. But you know who I think is still in a tryptophan-induced coma? The NFL, namely Roger Goodell, and maybe FanDuel, to name a couple.
Some people are definitely asleep at the wheel at both of those offices.
God. And I'm afraid to even bring this up because I don't know what you're going to have in the news, and I have a feeling that maybe something like that is in the news. And if not, we'll talk about it after the news. So I guess at this point, what I should really do is say, I'm going to throw it over to Harley for this week's Blitzed Podcast News.
Thank you, Steve. For the first time in history, a defensive player scored a touchdown on back-to-back snaps from scrimmage as Panthers rookie Jeremy Chinn recovered and returned two fumbles for touchdowns on two consecutive Minnesota Vikings offensive snaps. Chinn also finished the game with a team-high 13 tackles. Several analysts immediately jumped on Twitter and mentioned the Vikings taking it on the chin. As for me, I'm just mad that I didn't jump in and call the occurrence what it was, the revealing of the double chin. Tyreek Hill set new personal records by catching 13 passes for 269 yards and 3 scores this past Sunday. This included accumulating over 200 yards in the first quarter. Tampa attempted to lock him down in single coverage with Carlton Davis early, and that was an abject failure. On his second score, Hill celebrated by executing a backflip into the end zone. Hill failed to stick the landing, so I need to deduct a few tenths of a point from his score for that. I also need to deduct a full point from his score for his failure to do the obvious celebration by dancing the Carlton into the end zone. The Jacksonville Jaguars fired GM David Caldwell following Sunday's loss to the Cleveland Browns. He finished his Jacksonville career with a record of 39-87, which included a 2-1 record in the playoffs. Caldwell first joined Jacksonville back in 2013, and his first move was to fire Mike Mularkey and replace him with Gus Bradley. This, of course, raises the obvious question. How was Caldwell not fired immediately for choosing to hire Gus Bradley? Will Fuller admitted on Instagram today that he has been suspended for PEDs. Thankfully, the Texans still have Kenny Stills. Maybe Fuller should have admitted this a week ago. And finally, congratulations to all of our listeners for outscoring Broncos quarterback Kendall Hinton this weekend. This has been your BPN News Update.
Man, that's just... I'm really shocked that the NFL did not postpone that Denver game.
You know, we've talked about this on previous episodes, and it's becoming more and more obvious, I would say, that there is some sort of formula that the NFL is trying to use to say when they're going to delay something and when they're not. But if you look at it from a purely abstract standpoint, it absolutely seems unfair. And I'm saying this coming to you as a person who absolutely hates the Denver Broncos. They're one of the teams that I despise. But it was absolutely ridiculous that they were not, well, A, not allowed to use their quality control player coach that they were going to try to use. And then B, that they were not allowed a one-day exemption to move the game one more day, particularly now that we've seen how many days that the league has been moving and removing and removing the matchup between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Baltimore Ravens.
It's just, they're in there saying something that is coming apart at the seams. That's what it feels like to me with the NFL season at this point. It really does. I mean, we've got three games next Monday. Three.
Well, and they couldn't even bother to try to figure out a way to make them so they weren't overlapping too. So at least two of the games are going to overlap.
Yep. 2 of them, 5 o'clock.
But again, I mean, we've got a Wednesday night football game, a Wednesday afternoon football game, let me correct that, on the schedule tentatively,
yep,
barring not additional things happening in this. Now, you know what? I can see putting it off one time. I can see putting it off another time. But what's ultimately happened now is that the Ravens have gained a bit of an unfair advantage in that both Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins, along with two of their offensive line people who were – both in the close contact COVID pool, are going to be allowed to play now because of the delays.
I'd rather see them play full tilt if they could, quite honestly. I mean, I don't – look, I'm not a big, huge fan of the Steelers because my wife's a Browns fan, so I get that. May not be the most biased person, but I want to see these teams play at full strength. I didn't want to see Denver get obliterated because they had to go with a practice squad wide receiver as their quarterback. And maybe that's something – look, for anybody that's a new listener, we do not discuss what we're going to talk about in advance on the show other than, hey, what segment do we want to make? So we know we have a small segment that we're going to have after the news here that we're going to let Harley drive on. But other than that, we don't really discuss things. So I thought about this, and I was going to bring this up to you, and I decided not to do it because it doesn't make sense. This time of year, a lot of people want to say, who should I target, right? Who are the players I should target? You can't do that. There's nobody to target right now because it's such pot luck with who gets near who and can't play because of it at the last minute. So I don't think that you can do that this year. I think this year's just, it's different. And God forbid, whatever it was that Will Fuller took, they should actually legalize that because when has he ever been able to stay on a field healthy?
I was going to say, I mean, everyone expected him to miss time this year, but not for this reason.
Exactly. Anyway, so that was just something I threw around in my head, and I just quickly said, "Nope, there's no real value in it." Oh, okay, let's get backups. Let's get the backup for Derrick Henry, right? That'd be gold if Henry went out. Oh, wait, actually, if it's COVID related, so the rest of the running back is most likely going to be out too.
I guess in this particular situation, the big issue that the Broncos had, at least, was that all of their quarterbacks were in a quarterback room meeting and none of them had their masks on. Well, first off, I mean, I think that earlier in the season, people should have come to the consumption, come to the assumption that consumption. I think we're talking about plagues here or something. Yeah. Come to the assumption that maybe, just maybe, your practice squad quarterback should be dialing into the meeting from a Zoom call, maybe.
Honestly, yes. That's like, you would think that if there was one position or two positions that
specialists like kickers.
Yep, your kicker and your punter possibly, and maybe your holder. Right, your holder is usually going to be the punter anyway. Probably those guys should be separated, and then the same with your quarterback room. And there are some teams that have done that, I believe. But
further, though, again, you're talking about a team that they went to the league on Saturday and they said, hey, look, we admit we screwed up.
Yep.
We want to play the game. We have a coach. We have the room financially on our cap to sign him to a contract, let him play. They said no.
What?
They would not let him be activated as a coach to play in the game.
But they would be able to sign somebody off the street.
But they can sign someone off the street just fine.
That doesn't make sense to me, quite honestly.
That makes zero sense to me. And again, so I mean,
I'd have fired.
Yeah,
him.
You can say
I'd have fired
say,
him. I'd have fired well, him.
I'm surprised they didn't go that route, and they probably could have. But you have to assume that Goodell had some sort of plan in place if they were to try that workaround.
Yeah, well, they now, definitely now, wouldn't, they wouldn't lose that. They wouldn't lose that. What's the word I want? That fight, they wouldn't lose that in the court of public appeal.
Yeah. Well, so now they promote a guy from their practice squad who has only been practicing as a receiver ever since signing with the team. He was a quarterback in college. So based on that alone, that means that he has some familiarity with running an offense, that he can throw at least an attempt of a pass that would look reasonable. It might not be pretty. It might not be a tight spiral, but this guy was a quarterback at the collegiate level. That means he is better than 9,000% of the quarterbacks that may have played ball in high school. He's still, though, like to go out and have that person, even with no practice, you'd expect that the offense would be able to come up with a game plan, maybe like have him throw a couple screen passes.
You know, that's what I was
a
just
a couple saying. Short tosses, even a shell pass. He completed one pass. I put out a poll yesterday. I haven't looked at the results yet on Twitter. How many people, how many of our listeners do you think that they could suit up for a team and complete a pass? I mean, any one pass. I mean, again, 1 yard, 2 yard, negative yard pass. Just complete a pass.
So now, here, let me throw this out there. And then I'm going to stop, and I'm going to let you say what this next segment is, because I think we're already into it, but that's okay. I have a problem. Well, first of all, I don't know if you know this, and some of the listeners may. I'm a, like, leadership junkie, okay? Mm-hmm. If you are the leader of whatever it is that you're the leader of, and everybody's not always a leader. You might be a manager, not a leader, okay? But yeah. When you're a football coach, you're a leader. Like it or not, people have to follow you. It's one of the few cases where followers don't choose their leader. The leader can say, you have to follow me. With that said, the quarterback room issues, they don't fall on the quarterbacks. That falls on the head coach and then the GM. Mm-hmm. I don't care what you say that they messed up. You are the one that's in charge. It's on you. And their coach didn't take that, did not take accountability for that. And I think that's a cop-out. The second thing is exactly what you were just saying. How do you not game plan to get that man that's going to be taking snaps as a quarterback some easy throws behind the line of scrimmage, whatever it is, screens, like you said, double screens, bubble screens, I don't care. You know what else? Jet sweep, pitch the ball forward. That's a pass.
Yes, yes. Well, I look back to the game between Chicago and Green Bay last night. Again, our listeners who don't know this already, we record on Monday nights typically during the Monday night football game. So we're talking about Sunday night game between Chicago and Green Bay. And at near the end of the game, I mean, Mitchell Trubisky was by no means having a good game, but he was obviously doing better than Kendall Hinton did. But they set up a play where they had three wide receivers set out wide right, and they had their running back, David Montgomery, line up behind them, basically setting up an uncoverable screen inside the 5-yard line. And that Trubisky dropped back. It was like a two-step drop. Threw the ball basically horizontally to David Montgomery, who had three blockers directly in front of him, and he basically walked in untouched for a touchdown. Again, how is it physically not possible, even with just one day, for them to get a guy who played quarterback at the second highest level of sport in the country to complete a pass?
And for what it's worth, this is not an indictment of the player. This is an indictment of the organization, in my mind.
No, I feel bad for Kendall Hinton because he's forever going to be a footnote. I mean, I put out a poll also about the question about whether or not his performance was the worst performance ever by a starting quarterback. I obviously compared him to Nathan Peterman's starting tenure with the Buffalo Bills. And also the starting single game starting tenure of Josh Freeman with the Vikings, a game in which he's most known for throwing a pass 20 rows into the stands.
Yep.
It's scary. And it'll be interesting to see a couple days from now when those polls have finished running their course on Twitter if social media agrees with me, because frankly, I think that you can hold the NFL responsible for their being inflexible on this, but you also to some degree have to hold the team responsible, and that includes people on every single level of the team, including, like you said, the GM, the coaching staff, and to a degree the players too.
Yeah,
but you have to hold them responsible, because it shouldn't have been that bad.
Look, at the end of the day, if I'm the coach of that team, I'm out in front of it, and I'm taking the bullet. And all my people are going to know that. I'm taking the bullet. However, when I escort you out of the building as the media, I know that they're technically not there, right? When you turn the Zoom meeting off and you make sure that it's not really broadcasting, you unplug everything, blah, blah, blah. Then I'm saying, hey, Harley, come here. We got to have a talk. What were you thinking? Don't ever make me have to do that again. You know what I mean?
Well, yep. And I think it also is so important, though, that well, that those conversations definitely happen behind the scenes, and there is a unspoken or unpublished bond in a team sport environment like this between the individual players, their coaches, and their managers that most of us outside of the realm of professional sports don't really fully understand. It's kind of like, I mean, if you were to go on Twitter or Facebook and say, tag someone in a tweet and say, you know, so-and-so, you absolutely suck. First off, people need to realize that the people who are responding to those tweets more than often aren't the actual person, even if they have a blue check mark. It's usually someone working for them. But in the rare case that you do actually get a hold of someone on social media, they are people too. They have a right to...
Yep.
To feel something, to respond to something. And, I mean, obviously they don't want to because it could look bad on them. But it'll be, I mean, if you choose to engage them, don't be surprised if they engage you back.
And it's just not cool to do that. I mean, hey, what are we calling this segment? What was it, just the soapbox?
It's kind of a soapbox, but I think it's a soapbox. And, again, I saw a lot of just evil things said about Kendall Hinton online yesterday. I probably said a few things myself that were meant in jest, but it's not really fair. And obviously I was a little cruel with him here in the news today. But again, don't hold this against Kendall Hinton, folks. Yes, there were problems. Yes, everyone has some accountability. But I don't want to see a bunch of people going on Twitter and at Kendall Hinton just shooing him and telling him all the things that he should have done differently, because again, he was put in a no-win situation.
Okay, let's do this. I'm going to make up a segment for us to have right now. It'll be real quick.
Interesting. Okay.
We're going to call it, because we're going to do our two segments. We're going to do this segment, and we're going to do a segment on DFS like we always do. So this segment is going to be, should we target emergency quarterbacks? Should we target emergency quarterbacks with roster spots?
No.
Exactly.
I don't think I have anything else to say. I just don't see a reason to do that. I mean, even in a super flex environment, there's a reason they're third string quarterbacks.
So
they aren't that good.
You're right. The answer is, and I think everybody sees Taysom Hill, right? And they go, "Ooh, I have eligibility to play him in the tight end spot. Not anymore, but you did." Hinton, I can play him as a wide receiver, right? The thing is, the cautionary tale is there's too much risk. I know you're trying to exploit it, but don't go out and try to find a way to roster emergency quarterbacks in hopes that you'll be able to plug them into a flex spot or a position spot instead of the quarterback spot. You're going to get bit more often than not.
Yeah, realistically, well, you mentioned emergency quarterbacks. A team could have started Mohamed Sanu this past week, who is by all intents and purposes, the emergency quarterback for whatever team happens to have him active in a given week. Well, he was active for Detroit this past week with all the injuries they had in their wide receiver corps, and he actually had a pretty decent game. Now, I think a lot of those people that ended up rostering and the few that's tried to start Kendall Hinton in a wide receiver spot, thinking they'd get some solid production out of their quote-unquote pseudo quarterback, they could have been a lot better served by starting Mohamed Sanu on Thursday.
Yeah, you know, I'm a little angry about that Sanu thing because I actually picked Sanu up earlier in the season thinking that he was going to have some value. And then, of course, I had to cut him loose, and now he's back. Anyway, okay, so that's the segment right there. To target or not to target emergency quarterbacks. And Harley's answer was no, and my answer is no. So just say no.
Just say no. That it was true in the 80s, and it's true today, right?
Yep. What else? Anything else you want to say while you're on your soapbox? What else did you want to cover?
I don't know. I feel like there's it's the holiday season. Let's be all about giving the rest of the way. I mean, yes, this is a horrible, horrible situation we're in 2020.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Hey, I'll tell you what. I did some giving this weekend.
What did you give, Steve?
I gave my mind to a business that did not fulfill an order that I placed almost 2.5 months ago, mid-September.
Wait, in the age of Amazon and Amazon Prime, you ordered something 2.5 months ago and it still hasn't shown up?
Yes, I did. So I tend to be somebody that always has some what I think are great ideas for inventions, never acts on them, and then I see them. So probably closer to 12 years ago, I had an idea for an umbrella that opened and closed backwards, and they're actually somebody that makes it now. Like, I actually was in the process of making – I made a prototype, okay? The reason is so that it holds any of the water and a cap would pull it in. That's the only thing that's missing from the ones that are out there now, so that if you're a business person, when you get in your car, you don't have water all over the place, right?
Well, yeah, I think that sounds like a great idea. I'm surprised that no one came up with that before then.
Yeah, well, it's out there now, and I saw it a couple years ago when I was shopping. I was like, oh, really? So then a couple years ago, we get the dogs, or we got the first dog. Got it. He was a little finicky, and I was like, I'd grind up some of his treats that he likes and sprinkle it over the top. And I looked at my wife. I was like, we should make some sort of, like, seasoning for dog food. That might be something that's worth looking into. And that was it. Never talked about it again. And then earlier this year in September, mid-September, Shark Tank was on. I don't normally watch the show, but it happened to be an episode where these two guys come on and they talk about something called Shake It Pup, like Shake It Up, but Shake It Pup. And it was like a seasoning for dog food, just exactly what I was talking about. So I was like, son of a beep. And I was like, you know what? Let's order some. Let's see if it helps the dogs, and we'll see what it's like, whatever. Place the order, get charged 2 days later. Forget about it. Forget that it doesn't show up. Then I'm like, where is this? And check. No, nothing.
Well, first off, I'd like to add, I am not a regular watcher of Shark Tank either, but by sheer coincidence, I also saw that episode. So it's interesting that that's what you came up with. I think I've watched maybe 5 episodes ever of Shark Tank, and mainly, I wasn't really even watching them. They were just kind of in the background while I was writing articles. So,
yep, same here. So, anyway, I remember that show. Then this Friday, Black Friday, I get an email from Shake It Pup, putting an advertisement saying, buy two, get one free. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You haven't fulfilled my first order. So what do I decide to do? I treat it like a fantasy player that had a bad game and those idiots that go out and say something bad to them, I looked to see if they had a social media account, right? And they did, and they got like 21 followers or something like that. I don't know, five followers.
That's not very good. Were they successful on Shark Tank if they only have 21 followers?
Well, Mark Cuban is the one that went into the deal with them. So I decide to write up a tweet, and I think I pulled it up here real quick so I can read it out loud possibly. And no, it looks like it's gone. Anyway, I decide to tweet them. I'm going to see if I can find it real quick.
And so you tweeted the business, not yes. Mark Cuban, right?
Kind of. So I'll tell you what I did. So here, I know I pulled it up right now. Oh, and now it's not going to pop up on me. Of course not. Why not? Shake it, well, pup. That's why. Here we go. Okay, got it.
Please tell me they have Taylor Swift background music.
What's that for?
You said shake it off?
Oh, no, shake it.
Shake it pop.
Shake it pup.
Okay, shake it pup doesn't quite. Well, it still kind of sounds like shake it off, but. Now, Taylor Swift is doing like 1 second spots for Capital One now, so.
Okay.
Maybe she'd do something.
I got it. So here's what I tweet. One, I include the picture of the ad that I got in email. Uh-huh. And then I included a picture of my order so that they would know I really made an order, but I cut off the order number so nobody could see that. Now, the amount's only $30, right? $30 and change, yeah. I think. It's not the money that I'm mad about. Like you said, in today's day and age, 2.5 months, you don't have an order. So I said, not sure what game Shake It Pup is playing, but they took my money 2.5 months ago for my order that hasn't shipped yet. But they're cool sending an email about a Black Friday special. Buyer beware. So, Mark Cuban, is the plan for the product to make money or to use free loans from buyers?
Well, I would hope at the very least that you would get to take advantage of the BOGO deal since they haven't shipped it yet and throw in a twice your order at least, right?
I'll be honest with you. I don't want to give them any more money. It wouldn't matter if it was free, honestly. Anyway, about 20 to 40 minutes, something like that, after I tweeted that, I had a request for a direct message from Mark Cuban.
And it was actually, obviously, like I just mentioned, was it actually Mark Cuban or was it just one of the spokespeople? Or
no, it was actually Mark Cuban because he said, hey, I want to see what I can do to help you. Email me at, and he gives me his email address. And I emailed him, and then he forwarded it on to those two guys saying, see below. And today I get a text. Now, this was Friday or Saturday? Saturday, the 28th, or whatever day Saturday, the 28th was. So today I get a text saying that my order has been refunded. That's all. Your order number such and such and the amount of has been refunded. Never got an email response from them or anything. So I emailed Mark back, said, hey, I thought you would like to know. I got a refund. They never reached out to me. I thought that'd be of interest to you. I appreciate your help. You know, good luck with these guys. Sounds like you're going to need it type thing. And then he responded back, hey, I'm just sorry that they didn't handle it properly. Take care. So,
hey, and nothing else. You now have Mark Cuban's email for when you come up with your next $1 million idea.
That is true. That is true. But the point is, like you were talking about earlier, you might think that it's harmless when you're tweeting at these people that have all these different followers. Cuban's got like, what, 2 or 8 million followers or something like that?
Oh, he's one of the most followed people in the country.
8 million followers, just checked. And he happened, now maybe it was just when he happened to be looking at Twitter at that point, but he responded, he engaged. So that's why I think that it's to think that somebody wouldn't possibly engage when you do that and you think you're just being harmless. It may not be harmless. So be nice to people.
Exactly. It is, again, it is holiday season. And in the spirit of giving, you know what? Keep that stuff to DMs. Keep that stuff to emails. Yep. You don't have to air your dirty laundry on Twitter or on Facebook or on Instagram or whatever. Parler or whatever other sorts you use for talking to people.
You know what you said, giving, and I know we're just kind of, this is like the amoeba segment, quite honestly. We're all over the place.
But you know what? It's good because I mean, I think that a lot of people, myself included, like I said, we've had rough years and we all need to just take a step back and like breathe in a little bit and realize that, you know what? Things could be a hell of a lot worse.
It could. And that's something I always try to tell my wife and people I work with, like, always try to say, I try to find the silver lining in things. So we were watching the news, I don't know, Monday or Tuesday night last week, and there was an article, there was something in the news. I don't know if it was truly from the Richmond area or if it was a national story that they picked up locally, but it showed something basically where a guy went into a restaurant and he had a tab of bill that was like $7-$8. It was one drink is all he had. And he made, I think it was a $3,000 tip. And I think it was a jazz club. So actually, I don't think it was in the Richmond area. I think it might have been Chicago, the more I think about it. But anyway, my wife and I are watching the news, and we see that happen, and we're like, man, that's awesome. So the owner of the club, they interviewed him or whatever. He said that, you know, he got to tell his staff that they each got a $750, you know, tip, and they thought he was joking. And I was like, man, I really wish we could do something like that, but we're not made of money like that. And then my wife said, well, I've got to place an order for Instacart for, you know, the week. And so on Wednesday, we were going to place an order because Thursday, you know, was Thanksgiving. And we talked and I said, you want to just, no matter how much you spend, I think it was only going to be a small, like $30 order. I said, you just want to put a $100 tip on it. Like, yeah, it'll make it a little tight for us, stuff like that. But maybe it'll just make somebody's day. You know, that person's out doing all this hard work and let's just try and do something good for somebody. So,
well, and I think that everyone in the fantasy community at least can get behind the idea of certain charities being very, very good. And I mean, everyone's got their own charities that they support, but yep. I think that it's always a good thing for us to remind the fantasy community too about all the good work that Scott Fish does with the Scott Fish Bowl in terms of fantasycares.net and how they always go out and spend all sorts of money bringing joy to kids at Christmas time with gifts that they wouldn't otherwise get. Money's going into that. I know their shopping spree will be coming up very soon, and yeah. That's going to be great for those families that are in that situation. But it's also going to be very great for the retailers that Scott will be purchasing his products from because they're just as much in need too this holiday season.
Yeah.
And obviously then all the employees of those retail stores as well. So if you get a chance, make sure you donate to the charities that you approve of. But and if you don't have one in mind that you want to donate to, I'd seriously consider investigating fantasycares.net and the Scott Fish Bowl. I know Scott would definitely appreciate any donations you can put forth to him and his group.
Absolutely. And I just want to make this clear. I wasn't saying what we did so that people think that I'm just trying to brag that, oh, look what I did, you know, that was good. It was something that I saw that made me act. Hopefully by telling my story, maybe it'll make somebody else act and do the same thing. That's all.
Exactly.
That's the only reason I brought it up and wanted to say it. And honestly, I felt good about it. I felt good. Look, I don't ever like spending $100. It doesn't get me something, but I felt good about it.
Well, if nothing else, can you convince Cuban to get us some tickets for some basketball games?
I don't know. We'll see how that goes.
I would love to get some front row tickets for one game.
I'll send him like Merry Christmas wishes when we get closer to Christmas. See if he responds. The last time he responded, he did sign off as M, just like I could tell it was from a phone because everything was lowercase also. So yeah, I think it was actually him. All right, so we're talking about donating and all that kind of stuff. So I say we go over to our DFS segment where people can either, one, donate to DraftKings or maybe make some money on their own from what we recommend and use that to donate to their own cause or somebody else's.
Well, and I know I didn't really talk about it during the news. We talked about it a little bit pre-show. There's some issues going on this week with obviously all the schedule changes and how they affect the world of fantasy football, but also the world of daily fantasy. And as of this second, we're basically halfway through the first quarter of the Philadelphia versus Seattle game. And FanDuel has not yet released their prices and values for their players on the Sunday Millionaire slate for this coming weekend. Now, part of that is because, well, A, we don't fully know what teams are going to be in that. But this is maybe the third major issue that FanDuel has had from a PR standpoint this year alone. And I think that it's going to be one of those things that's going to really, really hurt their hardcore players a little bit. Again, I mean, they had the issues with games being canceled. They had the issues with server problems that weren't really well addressed earlier this year. And so now for our daily fantasy this week, all of our recommendations for you are going to be based on DraftKings prices. Now, I know that, Steve, you tend to look at DraftKings first and foremost anyways, but it's always a good thing to know that there is differences in prices between the two sites. There's also differences in scoring between the two sites. So knowing the difference between the price of a player on FanDuel and the price of a player on DraftKings can be the difference between whether or not you want to use that player. A lot of times, personally, if I have a player that I like, but I find that his price is about the same or lower on FanDuel, then that gives me even more reason to want to use him on FanDuel because of the fact that normally you have more money to work with there.
Right. Okay. So set the over-under.
This was a tough week for me. I think that we're going to have a hard time matching on most of these, so I set the line at 4.
I'll take over.
Interesting.
That was quick and easy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so for people that don't know, Harley and I don't discuss this. He sets the over-under how many we'll match on, and usually we're wrong. But I think we're going to match on the pay-up at quarterback first and foremost. Let's get out of the gates fast. Tell me who you are paying up for.
Well, so I looked at the pay-up options at quarterback, and realistically, I had a problem with pretty much all of them.
Yes.
I ended up paying up for a guy who's only $6,400.
We match.
That's Kirk Cousins versus Jacksonville. Only Dallas has allowed more passing touchdowns than Jacksonville. Meanwhile, since week 9, only Aaron Rodgers has more passing touchdowns than Kirk Cousins. Plus, well, Kirk will be at home, so weather won't be a factor. And he gets his top wide receiver, Adam Thielen, back this coming week, and possibly his top tight end, Irv Smith, also coming back. Again, when you've got so many high-priced players and each and every one of them has an obvious wart that just makes me not want to take them, I just keep sliding down until I find the highest-priced guy that I feel 100% safe in. And this week it's Cousins.
And Cousins is only $100 more than a guy that's playing quarterback that's a tight end that's really a quarterback that plays like a tight end.
I thought he was a fullback.
Whatever. Halfback, H-back, all that good stuff. So, yes, we match. I have, like, 4 names written down as my avoid. Of course, I had to cross them all out, and I picked one. But honestly, I think that we should get a match or at least a half match no matter what, because I think we both agree, stay away from all of the quarterbacks above Kirk Cousins.
Exactly.
So because of that, I decided to go with not the highest price guy, but the second highest, because if you really, really were, like – I don't love it, but if I had to play Russell Wilson for $100 more, I'd play him before I'd play Kyler Murray. So I'm staying away from Kyler Murray.
As you said, I did think about each and every one of them. We're not going to match here, but I also didn't go with the highest priced guy for very much that same reason. I thought that, you know what, it is still Russell Wilson. He probably will still throw for 300 yards and 3 touchdowns, which at 7,700 on DraftKings is basically 3 times value. So, again, his isn't a horrible play, and Giants obviously have one elite cornerback. And the problem with that is Seattle has 2 mega elite wide receivers. So, somebody is not going to be covered by James Bradbury in this game. I was looking at the receivers, and actually, I believe that DK Metcalf is going to perform the best because most of the production against them this year from wide receivers have come from more big bodied. Stronger outside wide receivers, less so than the speedy options on the inside. So I like – if you're going to go the Russell Wilson route, I would put Russell with DK next week. But again, yeah, I didn't want to pay that extra for him. The guy I chose to avoid was the same guy I chose to avoid last week, Justin Herbert.
Yeah.
Bill Belichick never allows an opposing rookie quarterback to do anything significant against him. The only exceptions during Belichick's tenure were Russell Wilson – and Andrew Luck. They both had success their rookie season against him. But typically, and obviously this game is in Los Angeles, but whenever Belichick has hosted a rookie quarterback, they've done absolutely nothing. Herbert's not going to have to deal with any weather issues down there, but he does have to deal with Stephon Gilmore and the brothers McCourty.
Yep. And I almost said him, but like I said, I told you why I defaulted up the hill some.
I totally agree there.
Then you can look at Deshaun Watson. I don't care that he's at home. He's playing Indy. Like, yuck. Even Aaron Rodgers playing against Philly, not the best. Roethlisberger against – no, just it's bad. The top price quarterbacks are bad. But that's a good thing because if you can save up, it's going to give you some room elsewhere. And speaking of saving up, who is going to be your value play?
Oh, my God. This one kind of hurts me. It really does kind of hurt me. Didn't think that this guy was even still in the league until this past.
Okay.
I'm going to make my value play Colt McCoy at Seattle.
And we have a match.
No way.
But Colt, before you go into that diatribe, there is a slim chance that Danny Dimes, if anybody still calls him that, could be playing this week.
How?
That's what I read. Last update I read is there's a they would know more, but there's a slim chance that he could possibly play this week. So I don't think it happens. I think that it's Colt McCoy. You could tell everybody why.
Well, so Colt is facing the team that's allowed the most passing yards this season, despite not having tonight's stats added into the count as of yet. So we can take the fact that they already have allowed 200 more passing yards than the next closest team and add whatever Carson Wentz and Jalen Hurts throw for tonight into that number. McCoy, he's only got 7 starts since 2011, but he's got just a plethora of weapons to throw to in that offense. And Golden Tate, Sterling Shepard, Darius Slayton, Evan Ingram, Caden Smith, he's got the weapons there that he can actually do something, and he hasn't been a horrible quarterback when given the chance to start. I mean, he hasn't been a great quarterback. I'm not going to go out on that step. But he was drafted to be a starter back in 2010 for the Cleveland Browns. He is one of the quarterbacks whose name you can find on the T-shirts that list all the quarterbacks for the Browns. But he has been a serviceable backup ever since leaving Cleveland and going to Washington last year. I do have to bring up the question. How has he not signed a contract to be a backup quarterback in Indianapolis yet?
That's a good question. for what it's worth, that vaunted or unvaunted or however you want to describe it, Seahawks passing defense, the non-existent one, through one quarter has allowed Carson Wentz 2 completions, 7 and 7 attempts for 4 yards. And Miles Sanders has 2 rushes for 1 yard. It's not a very stellar start for the Eagles in the first quarter in Seattle tonight.
Now, that's not going to assuage the feelings of Philadelphia fans calling for Jalen Hurts.
Not at all. Not at all. Okay. So, that's why I kind of went with the over, because I had a feeling we could match 2-3 at the quarterback position. I got out of it at 2, so I feel pretty good. Who are you paying up for running back? Because I think we're going to match here too.
Well, so the obvious thing to do would be to vote for Dalvin Cook.
You rope-a-dope me.
both Dalvin Cook and Derrick Henry, will have very high ownership coming off of very strong stretches of games. They're also both $1,500 higher in price than the guy I'm choosing, Nick Chubb at Tennessee. Only Derrick Henry has more yards from scrimmage than Nick Chubb since Chubb's return from injury. That includes Dalvin Cook. He's 3rd behind those 2.
So I got a question for you. Could you theoretically create a lineup to get all 3 of those guys in it?
You'd be looking at about 26,000 taken up from that, so you would have to go with 3 $4,000 receivers.
26,400, yep.
Yeah, so about 48. It'd be really hard to do unless you put Colt McCoy in there at 48, and even then you'd be really pressing to fit in a defense and a tight end. It could be done. It could be done. You could start all 3 of them, but you'd be picking a Jakeem Grant type for your third receiver.
And if there was a week to do it, I think this would be it, because I hate all the top-priced quarterbacks. And I think that when we get to wide receiver, you're going to see that I hate almost all the top-priced wide receivers too. Okay, so I got Cook, and you went with Chubb. Won't argue against that whatsoever. I think that we may match on the stay away. I think Josh Jacobs is an easy one because of the ankle. But, of course, I don't like to use injury for a reason, so I passed on him. And I'm staying away from a guy that I can't believe has actually been depressed financially cost-wise, but I think it's warranted. But I'm staying away from Alvin Kamara.
I actually did put Jacobs down, but I did look at Kamara too. And again, even at 7,000, you just can't trust him with Taysom Hill under center right now. He's not being thrown to at all.
Nope.
And realistically, he wasn't even the featured running back this past week. That was Latavius Murray.
Yep.
Who is nearly $2,000 cheap. I'm sorry, nearly $1,000 cheaper than Kamara on DraftKings this week.
So you're staying away from Josh Jacobs, though.
Yeah, and again, even if I was to go with Jacobs, the bum ankle, one of two things will happen. He's going to play. He'll get a few yards, a few stats, but he's going to see extra time on the bench because they have two capable backups in Devontae Booker and Jalen Richard to come in. And absolutely worst is he comes in, plays one series, and re-injures the ankle,
yep.
In which case you don't get any stats from
yep.
I mean, if we know beforehand that he's sitting out, obviously then you can look and say, okay, well, I'm definitely not using him then, but then I also won't use your recommendation of Kamara. But if you get to that point where you're looking, it's like Josh Jacobs at the Jets. Ooh, that sounds juicy. He's not going to play the full game. And if he does play the full game,
yep.
He could leave early. And when that happens, your whole roster is effed.
Yes. And it's, you know what? You have to look at it is there's no upside. It's all downside.
There's
no upside.
Zero upside.
So, and I almost boycotted picking a value play because I'm not going to have a value play running back in my on my lineup. I'm going to find a way to get two of those three guys in my lineup. But I had to pick one, so I figure I think I should use and exploit a team that is giving up a ton of points to running backs, fantasy running backs. And I'm going to go with Damian Harris at the Los Angeles Chargers.
Well, so that whole situation was weird this week. They activated Sony Michel,
yep.
Made everyone assume that he was going to split time with Damian Harris. Michel got no touches, and somehow another James White didn't get targeted at all, but he ran in 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean,
it's Belichick being Belichick, or is this something that we have to actually worry about?
Is it Belichick being Belichick, or is it James White taking Rex Burkhead's role?
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean?
Because Burkhead took James White's role earlier in the year.
Exactly. So Harris still had 14 carries. I just think that he's in line for a big game. If you really want to roll the dice and you want to go with a cheap running back, you could roll it with Sony Michel and see if he actually gets touches. It would not be unlike Belichick to do something weird like that because he's only, $4,000. But I wouldn't even take that risk. So the other guy that's low price that I would have considered, it's probably who you will pick against the tough defense, which just means more swing passes and short throws to him, is JD McKissick.
That is not who I went with. I can appreciate that pick. I considered Gio Bernard, assuming that Joe Mixon was going to miss another week facing against Miami, in a situation where with Brandon Allen under center or Ryan Finley under center, if they switch to him, they're going to have to run the ball and pass the ball short to Bernard. I didn't go that route. I thought about Devontae Booker, who I think will be the featured back for Vegas against the Jets. Great price. At that same price range, I thought about Jonathan Taylor, who should have got those 2 touchdowns that Jacoby Brissett got this past week. Indianapolis is going to be in Houston, where Houston's giving up a lot of yardage on the ground. I thought about going with Wayne Gallman at Seattle.
Yeah.
Again, we've been picking Seattle's defense all year. But ultimately, I went with a guy right around that same range that we mentioned a little bit earlier in our conversation about Sunday night's game. I went with David Montgomery at 5,500 against the Detroit Lions. Now, we didn't get quite the full commitment to the run that Matt Nagy promised us the previous week in the game against Green Bay, but we did see David Montgomery have the second best game of his career. Detroit has allowed a league worst 21 running back scores this season, and they are allowing 166 total yards per game to the position. The only other back that's done much of anything for them this year is the wide receiver, Cordarrelle Patterson. So you got to assume most of that yardage is going to go to Montgomery in some sense. Again, whether or not Matt Nagy holds true and actually does devote more attention to the running game, I mean, obviously the passing game isn't getting it done there, so they probably should. David Montgomery, 5,500. It's a great third running back to put into that flex spot, particularly if you're going to spend up for the two big ones.
Don't disagree there. Do you know who's giving up more points to the fantasy running back position than the Detroit Lions?
Well, I would normally guess the Las Vegas Raiders or the Carolina Panthers,
The answer is no one. No one. They're it. They're the gold standard right now. So good call. All right, let's run over to the wide receiver position, see what we can do here. Going to need to make up some ground. We didn't match any in the running back spot, and I thought we definitely would do that on the pay up.
Well, so wide receiver this week, much like you said, I looked at all those guys up top, and I was just having a hard time choosing which one I'd want to. I mean, I was actually defending DK Metcalf by looking at the fact that I figured that big-bodied receivers will actually do better against the Giants than that. I also looked at Davante Adams and thought about him for a little while going up against Philadelphia. I thought about rolling out Adam Thielen, but we still don't know if he's going to be cleared of his my understanding is that he didn't test positive for COVID, so he should be back, but didn't feel great about that. And then, of course, Will Fuller gets suspended, so we can take him off the list. I finally settled on A.J. Brown.
Hey, we got a match.
Home versus Cleveland.
We got a match. It was
basically, I just ran out of names to look at. Big-bodied wide receivers like Colin Johnson, Will Fuller, Tyler Boyd, Dontrell Inman, and Chase Claypool have all had success against the Cleveland defense this year. Meanwhile, Brown, he's scored in 7 of the 8 games since his return from injury, despite facing some pretty darn solid defenses like Indianapolis twice, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, the Buffalo Bills, and the Chicago Bears. Cleveland's pass defense is nowhere on par with those defenses. Brown can score pretty much any time he touches the ball. He's got such great yards after catch ability. It's a great play at 7,600 in a situation where none of the other high-priced guys is really a safe play.
Not at all. I agree. That's why we match. I think we're going to match on your stay away, too.
Well, in this case, I'm staying away from the highest-priced guy on the board, and that being Davante Adams versus Philadelphia. God. I spent a lot of time trying to fight myself into saying, I want to start Davante Adams because it's Davante Adams. But hear me out. During his career with Detroit, Darius Slay faced off with Davante Adams 8 times. In those games, Davante Adams scored 6 touchdowns. But he also only averaged 4.5 catches and 47 yards per game. Now, in reality, we don't know for certain that Slay covered him all of the time. So it's possible that some of those 6 scores came in different coverage. But we do know for a fact is, now since Pro Football Reference has been tracking this since 2018, is that Slay has allowed a total of 10 touchdowns in his coverage since the start of 2018. And only 1 touchdown all of the season so far in his coverage. With Adams, he might score. Getting a touchdown, certainly possible. Even 2 touchdowns is a possibility. But at $9,000, if he gets 2 touchdowns with minimal yardage and receptions, he's not going to make 3 times value.
So I agree with all that, but that's not who I picked. And that's funny because that's normally my MO, right? When I don't like everybody, go to the highest priced guy. But you can still make that small argument that Buddy could, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can make the same argument for DK Metcalf, but he could.
Yes.
You could make the same argument for DeAndre Hopkins, but he could.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to Keenan Allen, my argument is, but I don't think he will. And that's why I thought we were going to match, because you were staying away from Herbert, so I thought you would do a stack. But I'm staying away from Keenan Allen. I'm not touching any of those guys, quite honestly, but if I have to put one on paper right now for this exercise, I'll stay away from Keenan Allen.
Well, and so I actually stayed away from Keenan Allen last week. Inadvertently, I looked at things a little bit later and then realized that I actually was wrong in my decision to do that. And I actually used Keenan Allen in a few lineups. What I didn't take into account was that Buffalo, who has Tre'Davious White never travels outside of the hash marks. He spent most of the game covering Mike Williams, basically turning Mike Williams into a pumpkin for the entire first half of the game while Keenan Allen was still being targeted like Keenan Allen. This week, Keenan Allen is facing Stephon Gilmore, who actually is a true shadow cornerback when he wants to be. So it's not going to be a good matchup for him, and I don't have to rethink this one later because it's not going to be a good matchup either way.
Yeah. Okay. So matching it at value plays is always a tough thing to do. But I think I found a good value play. Although it seems to be dicey whenever you look at this team from a wide receiver standpoint, price-wise and all that stuff, I'm actually doing a stack at my value plays. I'm stacking Colt McCoy and Golden Tate. Golden Tate in a revenge match against his former team, the Seahawks.
I forgot that he played for the Seahawks. That's an old one there. So you know what? I also decided to stack my quarterback value play with my value play wide receiver. I went with Sterling Shepard.
See, that's what I mean. That's a half match. If we push it forward, we go over.
Well, here's why. So Sterling Shepard led the Giants wide receivers in receiving yards last week. Tate was actually targeted more than Shepard, but Shepard led the team in receiving yards. But the key part here is that Shepard had half of Colt McCoy's completions and 40% of Colt McCoy's targets. So the big targets beforehand going to Tate and Engram were off of the arm of Daniel Jones. I mean, Seattle's rotten against the pass. If I'm going to play McCoy, I'm definitely going to stack him with the guy that I think is his most trustworthy receiver, and that's Shepard.
Fair enough. You're also talking 58, or is it 5,300 versus 3,800? So,
yes.
And now, if you're going to try and get those big running backs in your lineup, that's where you want to go to the guy that's 3,800 bucks.
Yeah, and I actually was using Golden Tate in a lot of my stacks with Daniel Jones last week. Of course, we know how that worked out for Jones getting injured, so that kind of sucked. But
okay, so we're running a little long, but now we're probably close to being on time. No big deal. Whatever it is. All right, so we have three matches. We need two out of three to technically go over. But if we get one, I'm giving myself the win because I'm counting that as a push.
Okay.
Who are you going to pay up for at the tight end position?
Well, I think that the tight end position, the player to play up for is Darren Waller at the Jets. He's 6,100. He's the highest priced guy on the slate for DraftKings. The Jets have continued their absolute ineptitude against tight ends. They gave up two more tight end touchdowns this past weekend, giving them a league worst 9 on the season. And you know what? Despite an easy matchup against Atlanta last week, Waller had his second worst game of the season. But realistically, I'm going to say that falls more on the feet of Derek Carr than Darren Waller, because Carr was so far off target this past week that he was benched for Nathan Peterman.
That's bad. That's bad. So we do have a match, by the way. But I did give some consideration to a guy that's a lot cheaper. Even though he's second highest tight end on the board, he's 1,100 bucks cheaper. Mm-hmm. Problem is, there's some questions like, is Kenny Golladay going to be back this week? Probably not. If I knew he was out, I'd be more apt to give some consideration to Hockenson. It's a great matchup, I think. But
It is. Chicago's really bad against tight ends, too.
So I don't think you go wrong with either one of them. And if, again, I'm trying to force that running back tandem, I'm probably going to default to Hock to get it if that's what it takes, but we're probably going to have to go a lot cheaper anyway. So, no, we match with Waller there, but I did give consideration to Hockenson. I do think, based on something you said earlier, that we're actually going to have a match at our stay away.
Well, interesting. So the guy I'm staying away from is Evan Engram at Seattle.
Boom, boom, boom.
It's 4,900, which doesn't seem too bad. But here's the thing. He's coming off a huge game with Daniel Jones at the quarterback position.
Yep.
Now, here's the thing. Because of the fact he had a huge game, he is going to be extremely, extremely over-owned this week. That's what we want to avoid, even in the situation where he actually is going to perform well. I don't think he's going to perform that well this week. And what people don't know is, once Colt McCoy entered the game, Engram was targeted only one time. He caught the pass. It went for -1 yard. So with Colt McCoy at quarterback, Engram ended up with -1 yard on the game. Seattle, by the way, they've also allowed the fewest tight end receptions this year. They're allowing just over 3 per game. That's coming into tonight's game against Dallas Goedert and Richard Rodgers, which could bump that number up. But coming into tonight's game, they had allowed just over 3 receptions per game to the position. There's better options in that Giants passing offense to go with, including Golden Tate and Sterling Shepard.
And, okay, I'll add one more thing in there. Let's talk total fantasy points. Mm-hmm. Only the Packers, Niners, and Steelers have given up fewer points to the position than the Seahawks have this year.
Very believable.
Okay. Let's sweep the tight end position. I think we can. I'm going to pay up for a guy that's a little bit risky. I think he's got a great matchup. He's got to get back. We're not 100% sure on that yet. But I'm going to pay up. I'm going to have my value play be Irv Smith.
Oh, so close and yet so far. I went with Kyle Rudolph versus Jacksonville for much the same reason that you went with Irv Smith versus Jacksonville. No team has allowed more tight end scores than Jacksonville. They're tied for the league worst 9 with the Jets that we mentioned earlier. Jacksonville has allowed at least one tight end score in 7 of their 11 games. And since week 6, only 6 tight ends, a couple of them being guys by the name of Travis Kelce and George Kittle. I'm sorry, not George Kittle, Travis Kelce and Darren Waller. And 4 other tight ends, that's 6 players, have more receiving yardage than Kyle Rudolph. Irv Smith currently is listed on the wrong side of questionable for this coming week. So it remains to be seen. He's got 2 different injuries. He didn't play last week. He came out of the game the previous week. I think that he's less likely to play than Rudolph this week. And again, I can look at really quickly here, but I do believe that Irv Smith's salary is only $200 cheaper than Rudolph on DraftKings. So, again, if Irv Smith plays, and it's a big if, he's certainly a great value at $3,200, but I don't mind paying that extra $200 for a guy who's the 6th-ranked tight end over the last 6 weeks.
Okay, so you set the over-under at 4. We hit on 5 full matches.
We got a couple of partials in there, too.
I'm assigning a half match for the value play at wide receiver for Tate Shepard, and I'm going to assign a half a match for the tight end value play also for the Smith-Rudolph part. So we technically had 6, but either in any event, the over hits this week.
Can we also give a third of a match for the quarterback situation?
Yeah, actually, that we almost should, quite honestly. But in any event, it's over. The over hit, that's all I'm happy about. So with that said, I want to make sure that everybody understands it. Look, there's a bunch of great tools that you can use at the Huddle, from rankings to articles. You name it, it's there. You can put in your own scoring. Any kind of intricacies should work with it so you know how it's going to impact your team, et cetera.
Smart-ass commentary from me.
Smart-ass commentary from Harley. And you can also get that from him on Twitter. And you can follow him at Nuclear Harley. You can follow me at Steve Gallo NFL. And for what it's worth, we never take victory laps on stuff. So, Harley, my apologies for my tweet saying, hey, Emmett Smith, this past week. That was just me feeling it a little bit. But in any event, I want to make sure that you guys, you know, stay safe. And as we like to say, get blitzed responsibly. Cheers.